This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman's the producer. Hi, it's John Williams, and let's go all the way till 1 o'clock. Then the Anna DeVlanta Show. Lots of ground to cover, I mentioned a moment ago. We'll talk a little bit about emoji and some of the digital stuff with Ian Schur, the editor-at-large at CNET. We start today with Paul Nolte, the partner at Wealth Management, Kingsview Asset Management. You can visit kingsview.com. Welcome back. It's nice to have you with us. Paul, how are you today?
Just watching more flakes and falling from the sky, waiting for spring to arrive.
When you say watching flakes, that wasn't rhetorical, was it? You were talking about snow?
Yeah, it's the ongoing stuff that's going here in Chicago. Watching the markets fall here a little bit as well, just taking a little bit of profits over the last couple of days here. We've had a great run in stocks since the election. And so investors are just taking a step back here, I think. I don't think it's anything to be concerned about, much like maybe another inch of snow.
Yeah, no kidding. I was actually thinking about that. There was a time when the Dow off 250 and the NASDAQ off 107, we'd say, uh-oh, what's happening? And today it's not such a big deal. It doesn't feel that way.
Well, I mean, you're talking about much larger numbers. I mean, I remember when the Dow was under 1,000 and we're at 31,000. So, yeah, a couple hundred points on 31,000 isn't what it used to be, for sure. So, again, what we try to do is we take a look at the broader market and try to take a look at what most stocks are doing. And really, up until this week, most stocks have been rising. So it's been a very good market for the last few months.
And so if that's a little profit-taking today, that's fine. We always think of the markets as sort of an indicator of where the economy is going. And since the economies continue to go up, are you still bullish on the economy for 2021?
Well, you know, as we've talked about, it's still a very split economy. We got numbers this morning on the weekly jobless claims, and those are back up again. And they're going to be ugly next week because nobody can file claims given the weather that we're seeing across the United States. So we're very interested in getting the virus numbers down and seeing that and allowing the economy to open up and go to restaurants and maybe the Wrigley Field or various stadiums around the country. That, I think, is going to help the unemployment. That's going to help the economy a lot because, again, the service part of the economy is two-thirds to three-quarters of the economy, and that's really been limping along now for the last 12 months.
CNBC has a story, though, that says that retail sales were solid in January. Maybe people were spending that second round of stimulus. What's your reaction to that?
No, absolutely they were. And it was across the board. So they did spend when the restaurants were open. So you did see restaurant spending go up. You did see it from the big box retailers. You saw it online. You saw it from clothing and autos. So the stimulus actually is having some impact, but again, it may be more of a one shot. You know, if I'm giving you a $600 check, you spend it, you're done. What really needs to happen is you need to have that ongoing job where you're getting that paycheck every week, every other week, so that you can maintain that spending as opposed to just a one shot.
Well, it's with that in mind. You know, we had this economist on not that long ago, and he said that the value you get out of that money is about 40 cents on the dollar back into the economy. People either pay off debt or save it. That's what's happened of late. And he did not like the idea because it's not very well targeted. What's your thought about using these $600 or $1,200 payments as a way to stimulate the economy?
It's temporary, and because really it comes down to being able to open up the economy and get people to working as opposed to just sending them checks. Remember where those checks are coming from. They're coming from those of us that are working and paying taxes, and that's something that I think the government needs to do from a long-term perspective. For a short term, I understand that, but really it's going to come down to a healthcare issue to solve that before we get to the financial issue of opening up and getting paychecks going again.
I'm sorry, I don't know what you mean. Why are you bringing up healthcare there?
Because, you know, once everybody feels comfortable getting out and about, And we can then start to get those people employed that way. So that's really more the issue. $600 is not going to solve that problem. It's going to be vaccinations, et cetera, that's going to allow us to do that.
Still, all right, I'm going to put you in charge of the next stimulus. What are you going to do?
I think if we do anything in the stimulus package, I think it needs to really be targeted to the lower end of the wage earners. So probably cap it at maybe 50, 75. I would also do those businesses that have been closed. So a lot of the restaurants, a lot of parts of this service economy. And I don't think, too, we need to have a $1.9 trillion package. I think it can be a smaller package, again, if it is targeted as opposed to sending checks everywhere hither and yon. So I think that's really the part of the economy that is hurting the most and is probably in the most need of help.
Paul Nolte, partner, wealth manager, Kingsview Asset Management, kingsview.com. We'll talk again. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Ian Schur joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, editor-at-large at CNET. Hi, Ian. Welcome back.
How you doing?
I'm doing really well. I always thought that this business of emoji was trivial. That's kind of a big deal when new emoji roll out, isn't it?
It can be, yes. And especially one of the things I think is really interesting is that when new emoji come out, there's a lot of conversation about, you know, what they kind of represent to a lot of us. Because what's happened is that emoji have really become a way that we communicate, right? And it's become, for a lot of people, a very important way they communicate. So, for example, Apple is actually going to have new emoji coming out. Now, this is all run by an organization that actually figures out all the emoji. Yes, there is an organization that figures it all out. But Apple is usually one of the first to announce all these changes. So, for example, there's going to be a flaming heart emoji, which I guess means that you're, like, super in love. I don't know. This is the thing. People get to kind of interpret them however they want. And the syringe emoji, which has been around for a while, used to have a blood droplet coming out of it. Now it's just going to be a syringe to kind of help people talk about COVID if they want to.
Is there going to be an emoji with a face mask?
So there actually already is an emoji with a face mask, and there's going to be more variations on all of that. And I think part of why they're doing that is they're realizing that people have really liked being able to change their skin color in emojis and all sorts of other stuff rather than the generic yellow person. So I think that that's going to be something we see more and more of as time goes on.
One last thing about that. CNN had a story that said that the emoji isn't cool anymore. Sorry, millennials. So is that like how Facebook is now the province of grandparents? Emoji is no longer on the cutting edge?
Well, certain emoji. That's what's really fascinating is that if you use, for example, the crying laughing emoji, I guess that means that you're laughing so hard you're crying, that is considered not cool. Instead, now Gen Z people apparently prefer to use the skull face emoji because they're like they're dead laughing, haha. So it's kind of one of those things of, you know, the way that we communicate is changing, and definitely younger people, when they start using social media, or in this case emoji, they want to have a different spin on it. And this is how we see it kind of playing out.
So there's going to be a hearing in Congress about what happened with GameStop and that it's going to include more than just GameStop. A lot of the players will be there. Is that right?
Yeah, actually, it's happening right now. So you can go to CNET and watch it live. And it's really interesting hearing. I mean, part of what's going on here is that Congress, amidst all of the partisan rhetoric, is trying to figure out what happened during the whole GameStop craze and whether anything bad happened in the market. There's a lot of accusations of market manipulation and bad behavior and all of that. And they're actually asking these people, CEOs of a couple of the hedge funds, CEO of Robinhood, CEO of Reddit, and the guy who made a lot of the money off of GameStop, he kind of kicked everything off. All of them are under oath and they're answering questions right now.
Do you suspect that there's some dark secret or crime that needs to be exposed, or is it pretty obvious what happened?
On some level, it's a little column A and column B, right? I think that we definitely understand a lot more about how the market works than we did, back in January as a result of all of this. But also, it underscores how opaque the market is and how much it allows for bad behavior to happen and how we are unable to see it, right? You can't point to the bad behavior and say, ah, that was bad right there. It's when someone's speeding, you can tell immediately that they're speeding, but when they're manipulating the market, it's very hard. And I think that hopefully there are some ideas that are going to come out of this to help people understand the market better and be able to identify bad behavior.
Well, I know not everybody on Robinhood got rich, but if what they did was manipulating the market, it's what the other guys were doing. That's why they were doing it. So if legislation comes out of this, I think it has to affect both sides of that equation, right?
I think so too, and if you look at the people who are watching this hearing, you have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ted Cruz from Texas, and you have Donald Trump Jr. all agreeing that something is bad happening in the market. When you have those three extremes agree on anything, you got to watch out.
I presume then it's being done virtually, because Ted Cruz, I don't think, is even in Texas, let alone Washington.
Yeah, he's not actually in the hearing himself. He's not part of the proceedings, but everything is happening virtually, yes. And including some of the Texans are actually coming in through video chat and phone to be able to talk about it. So they're all trying their best.
Why is this a revelation? There's a story on the digital sphere today about the Russian hackers that most recently tapped into the U.S. government system. And I guess the angle on it is that maybe some of them were in the United States. Is that the new wrinkle?
Yeah, I think what we're trying to figure out more and more is exactly how this hack happened, because it was pretty pervasive and also very unsettling, right? It was using technology that a lot of companies, including the U.S. government, including Microsoft, who is known for their security efforts, that they were able to be hacked. And apparently there are some signs that people from the United States were somehow involved in this, even though it was being orchestrated from Russia. And if that's the case, it kind of underscores how much danger there is in a lot of this technology and how much more hacking has become not just someone trying to get you from St. Petersburg, but rather people here in the States as well.
Well, does that make those people agents of the Russian government or just unwitting hackers that hack and didn't even realize who they were working for?
That is part of the ongoing question. I mean, if you get into spy novels and you learn about the way Russians' intelligence works, usually it is a little bit of AMP, right? They have agents that they try to recruit, but they also use people who are unwittingly helping them. And it's hard to tell right now which one is which. But we do know that when a major hack happens and people hear about it, other bad actors try to benefit from it. So I don't know yet.
Your Molly Price wrote a thing about a smart cuckoo clock. What's this?
So Amazon is, they're known for really kind of thinking of weird ideas, right? And, I mean, they started this smart speaker craze in a lot of ways, right? That a lot of people, when they first saw it, including myself, they're like, really? Talking to a speaker? That sounds ridiculous. Now, fast forward a decade, and we're all doing it. Well, a lot of us. Well, now Amazon's trying all sorts of other stuff. So you may remember a couple years ago, they actually put the smart technology into a microwave. You could, in a toaster, you could actually talk to these devices. And it's like, I don't know. Well, now they're going to try a cuckoo clock. They're considering it. They're also considering a kitchen scale, which I think makes a lot more sense. And then also, my favorite, they're considering a sticky printer. You talk to the printer, and it will print out a yellow sticky that you can then put anywhere you want. So I guess the 80s are back again for sure.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're out of time. It's always a pleasure, Ian. Well done. Thanks for your visit.
Absolutely. Take care.
Ian Schur is an editor-at-large at CNET.com. This is something you may not have thought about, or you've thought about a lot, depending on whether or not you have a 16-year-old in your home. 71% of parents report that their teenager's driver's ed was delayed because of COVID-19. Remember when you were 19? Pardon me, 16, 15, and you could just see as the Holy Grail your driver's license, and then a pandemic hits? How would you have coped? And how disappointed would your parents have been, because now you could have taken your sister to practice? 71% of parents say their teen's driver's ed was delayed due to COVID-19. I want to talk a little bit about that with somebody who's kind of in that business, and that is Aceable. Aceable is a company that actually does online training or testing for people. And on a phone line right now is Laura Adams. She is the Senior Driving Analyst at Aceable. Thanks for joining us today, Laura. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
I don't think I gave a very good description of what you all do, though. Tell me about your business.
Yes, Aceable is a mobile-first education platform for certification and training courses. Aceable's goal is to help you get the education that you need to reach your goals, like driving.
So do you focus exclusively on driving, or do you teach other things?
There are other courses as well. Real estate is one example. So right now, if you need driver's education, or maybe even you need defensive driving, maybe you're thinking about switching your careers to real estate, we can help you with all of those licensing and certification needs.
Is this for 16-year-olds, or is it for anybody who is getting a driver's license?
That's a great question. It's for anyone. So no matter what your situation is, if you're just starting out as a young person, or maybe you're an older person that got, let's say you got a ticket, you got a moving violation, and you're looking to get some help with cleaning up your record, we have defensive driving courses. Some of those courses will even qualify you for an insurance discount. So that can really save money depending on who your insurance carrier is.
I guess I can understand how you would be able to give me a test. I mean, I have to take a written test at some point when I get my driver's license or when I'm renewing it in Illinois. But how do you manage the behind the wheel thing? I guess you can't do that, huh?
Right. So, you know, every state is a little different. For Illinois, the graduated driving laws do require you to complete driver's education. So you can do that in person or you can do it online, which is certainly what we recommend. It's quite convenient. So once you've got that, you're able to get your learner's permit. And that's a time where you're driving with supervision. You've got to do 50 hours of driving and then 10 at night with an adult. And then you can move on to your intermediate license, which you've got to have for 12 months. So there's a process that everyone has to follow. And by age 18, you can get an unrestricted license if you haven't had any violations in the past 6 months.
You just described the way it is in the state of Illinois, right?
That's right.
That's interesting because when I got my driver's license the first time, and granted it was a while ago, but I had to have my driver's ed teacher there. You know, it was done through the school. You're saying that I would not have to do that, that if my parents were the de facto driver's ed teacher, I could be up to speed on this process?
That's right. I mean, in some cases, you may need to, just depending on where you are, you may need to get, you know, in person. But what's interesting is that during COVID, there have been some restrictions lifted. In some cases, they have allowed a parent to, let's say, FaceTime with the instructor to show how their student, the young person, is driving. So it really just it depends on where you are. But in most cases, you know, starting online and getting that certification down, that's, you know, that's the first point. You've got to get that done in order to qualify for your learner's permit. Then you can go on and get that driving experience that you need before you actually have to take, you know, a physical road test.
Laura Adams is a senior driving analyst at a company called Aceable at aceable.com. So would you be the company that I could go to get that done? Or does the state of Illinois or the Department of Education have some oversight on that? Or would you step in and be that entity?
Right. So Aceable is an approved way to get your driving education done in Illinois and in many states. So that's really your first point of entry is to make sure you do get that driver education. All drivers in the state of Illinois must get that driver education completed in order to move on. So, you know, it's a really convenient way to get the education that you need and make sure that you're going to be prepared for those exams that are going to come up when you do have to take the actual licensing exam. So
right.
There are certain phases that you've got to go through, but driver's education is the first one. And it's really important because it sets a good foundation for safe driving. And it makes sure that everybody knows the law, they understand what's right, what's wrong, and, you know, how to keep themselves safe out there. It's really important. We've got so many distractions on the road these days, folks with their phones and talking and texting and all of that. It's really a way to set a very safe foundation for drivers.
Why would I go to you if the state is offering or the school district is offering this? Is it cost competitive? What do I get from you that I wouldn't some other way?
Yeah, absolutely. Cost competitive for sure. And I would say convenience, 24/7, being able to take the course at your own pace, you know, when you want to do it, working it into your schedule. I think also just being able to do it from home, you know, by a computer, just makes it very, very easy. And the courses are also quite engaging. They're really designed to keep students engaged with the learning process. So I think, you know, a lot of cases, students may find it more engaging than some of the other ways that they could learn.
You know, I have to go, but I think another application of this, I don't know if this is how it works, but maybe your kid has their license or they're on track to get it, fine. Go ahead and give them the test and see how they're doing. You know, it might be a good challenge or a refresher. It might be a good over-the-shoulder way for the parent to see what the kid really knows, right?
Absolutely. You know, I don't think you can be too prepared when it comes to driving. We really do have to make sure that everyone is getting the education and the safety tips that they need. And every student is different. So, yes, making sure that the students are prepared, they really have that information and are going to be able to put it into practice when they get on the road is key.
The business is called Aceable.com. Laura Adams is a senior driving analyst there. Nice to talk to you today, Laura. Good luck.
Thank you so much.
It's 1243. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Amy Guth's got more news for you. First, let's head into the WGN Radio Newsroom. This is Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago area homes are selling faster this year thanks in part to low inventory and low interest rates. According to stats from the Chicago Association of Realtors, the average time on the market has been cut in half in at least 30 suburbs. In Downers Grove, for example, homes that sold in January spent an average of 53 days on the market. Crane says that's less than half of the time it took for homes to sell in January of 2020. The same thing's happening in Western Springs, Brookfield, Lincolnshire, Wooddale, and Clarendon Hills. McDonald's says it will tie executive bonuses to meeting diversity and inclusion targets. The company will also begin releasing a full breakdown of U.S. employees by race, ethnicity, and gender, a victory for transparency advocates and investors increasingly pressing companies to do more to address the country's deeply rooted social inequality. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Let's visit with Amy Guth and start by talking about what's going on in Second City. Not the Second City, but Second City, the comedy place. What's going on there, Amy?
Yeah, that's right. So as you might recall, in October, Second City put itself up for sale for the second time in its history. Well, the news today is that it has been sold. It has been sold to New York-based private equity firm ZMC. They have an affiliation with Grand Theft Auto, the video game. ZMC was founded by Strauss Zelnick, who is best known as the CEO of the company who created that game. So what they're looking to do, they say they want to invest in the next generation of comedy talent and invest in people and creativity. But this is very, very big news. I mean, Second City is such an institution here. So to see what this new owner does will be very, very interesting. And we're just going to have to wait and see what they do.
I was talking to somebody over there, and they didn't feel like this was going to be a bad thing for Second City, although it does give you pause when our namesake comedy troupe, and it's more than just a comedy troupe, of course, but when it's bought out, when somebody else owns it, what's going to happen to the direction or the employees? My understanding is that it's all going to stay here, but I hope that's the case.
Yeah, I certainly do, too. I mean, they've grown it since they founded it in 1959. They've grown it into, you know, beyond just comedy, into, you know, educational wing and even business, you know, business consulting. And they do so many things, and they're such an institution here. I think it will be interesting, though, to see, you know, players that have a hand in tech development and video game production being involved in Second City. This tells me maybe there are some virtual components that could come in and mm-hmm. things like that, and maybe there will be some technology applied to what they're doing. But I think it'd be very interesting to see. Very, very interesting.
Yeah, no kidding. And Second City's obviously been doing a lot of stuff online and via Zoom. They have transitioned well. I'll tell you, Grand Theft Auto is a well-known name of a video game, but it's not what I think of when I think of Second City. So
right.
I hope that doesn't tell me too much. I hope that's just a footnote. Talk to me about McDonald's. Talk to me about Wendy's.
Okay, well, a couple of things with McDonald's. So they have announced that their leadership, program, like for bonuses and that bonus structure and whatnot, it's part of that is going to be based around diversity and inclusion goals. And so what they're doing is they're going to release a lot of demographic data about who works for McDonald's, both franchises and corporate locations, and the racial and gender makeup of all of those people. And what their stated goals are, they said that they're aiming to have 35% of the senior directors and higher leadership roles be people of color. So that's a 6% increase from last year. They also said they're going to work to have women represented more. They want to have at least 45% female leaders by 2025, which is 8% from last year. And they're looking for total gender parity for leadership by the end of 2030. So they're kind of doing two parts of that. So 15% of executive bonuses are going to be based on these kind of metrics. At the same time, they're releasing a lot of demographic data to try to kind of hold themselves accountable so the public can hold them accountable, saying, hey, this is where we're starting and this is where we want to get. I think it's going to be very interesting. Transparency advocates are really, cheering this move. But this is also coming from investors. There's increasingly more investors are saying, hey, if you don't release this data, we're going to file the paperwork to kind of force your hand to do it. So we're seeing this from more and more companies. We saw over the late summer, some investors in New York said, hey, they kind of put about two dozen companies on notice saying, if you don't release this, we're going to do it for you. We're going to force you to do it. So I think there's going to be a really interesting move from McDonald's. They came out of last year, a lot of allegations from, mishandled sexual harassment claims, things like that. We've seen some franchisees file lawsuits saying that there was some systemic racial discrimination. So this seems like a really interesting step for them.
They're making a unique effort to promote some of their products, like the chicken sandwich.
Yeah. Okay. So the chicken sandwich war that we had last summer or two summers ago, it's a thing again. It's definitely a thing again. McDonald's is in there. Wendy's is stepping into that. Wendy's was very absent from that chicken sandwich war before, but now they've kind of upped the game a little bit. They have a jalapeno popper sandwich, which is kind of the spicy take on the sandwiches they've had for quite a while. However, McDonald's, of course, because this is all about one-upmanship, McDonald's is releasing swag along with their chicken sandwich. And part of that is a sweatshirt. So for $5, you get this kind of swag package. This is opening today. That's a hoodie, a custom song, and, of course, this kind of the first taste of this new crispy chicken sandwich that they're doing. So there's been a lot of buzz on this online. I cannot personally imagine walking around with a chicken sandwich hoodie, but for some people, this is probably just the thing.
Well, I was thinking, really, are you that desperate, McDonald's? The food doesn't sell itself, but Happy Meals used to come with toys, and we love to get the merch from McDonald's for our little kids anyway.
Yeah, and we even saw an uptick in that when they were, people kind of, will surge around certain collector's items, and we just recently, they were in the news for Pokemon items, that adults were kind of going and buying up Happy Meals and to try to find all these, collector's items. So you're exactly right to kind of draw that parallel. Who knows, the special song and this, new hoodie might be super duper collector's items one of these days.
Mm-hmm. Or they might be Beanie Babies. I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah.
You follow the airline industry for us. What's new with Boeing today?
Yeah. So interesting moves from Boeing. So two more board members are stepping down. That is from a statement. So the two that are leaving are former Medtronic CEO Arthur Collins Jr. He's been on the board for 14 years. And former U.S. trade rep Susan Schwab, she's been a director since 2010. There's been a lot of conversation in the last, few weeks, especially heating up, around how the board handled the 737 MAX crisis at the time. There's still a lot of questions swirling. But this means that nearly half of the 10 remaining board members have served for less than a year and a half, because you might recall that we saw some others that had stepped down. Nikki Haley was on that board. Caroline Kennedy was on that board. All these people have left this board. So we have this kind of big turnover at the moment on the Boeing board amidst all these questions that are swirling. So keeping a close eye on that, because, there's still so much to be solved with Boeing. I think a lot of people kind of thought, well, once that 737 MAX is flying again, that's kind of the end of that chapter. And that's not really the case, because all these questions that really have come up in such a bold way in the last couple of weeks around how former CEO, Dennis Muhlenberg, handled it and how he communicated with the board and how then the board communicated with the public during that time. So, you know, as we said, two more board members have stepped down, kind of a new looking board in board terms anyway. So I think it'll be interesting to see what else happens, what other board members do, and what moves forward with the questions in that probe around how that was handled and how information was communicated with the public.
Okay, as always, taking a look at the airline industry also for us. Amy Guth, thank you, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch.